Hi everyone, welcome back to Podchat Live, episode 114. Craig's here with me, and as always, and we are recording this on the 20th of February, 2024. We've got quite a bit of housekeeping to get through today, Craig, haven't we? With our messages that we've been
It's good,
receiving.
good, good, good to get messages and feedback.
Yes, we always ask for them, and then when they come, it's a delight to be able to read them out. So, firstly, let me start by saying that if we were the kind of podcast that played music or jingles or had any kind of production value, now would be about the time we'd play some kind of fanfare, because after weeks of begging on Spotify, we have finally surpassed 50 ratings. We are at 56. So thank you to all the Spotify listeners for giving us ratings. You're the best. Apple listeners, you are not the best. We are still down on 27. So some work to do there. But one review that we had posted on Apple, which, well, Spotify doesn't let you post reviews, but Apple does. And this is from a reviewer called Fat Boy Swabs. And this review tickled us when we saw it. And it is this: the only podiatry podcast you need, open brackets, disclaimer, I don't know if there are any other podiatry podcasts or if you need them, but this is worth a listen, close brackets. That's exactly the kind of review that we're here for, isn't it? Nice and kind of downstated, but I think there's a compliment in there somewhere. And I like the fact that we're the only podiatry podcast that he is or he or she is potentially, well, I guess it's a he, because he said his name is Boy in the thing. So thank you, Fat Boy Swarbs, we appreciate that. Please, if you want your reviews read out, please go on to Apple, leave us one, leave us a rating while you're there. Next up, we received a lovely email from Jorn. I hope I've said his name correctly. He is a physiotherapist and a podiatrist in Belgium. And he sent us a lovely email saying he was enjoying the podcast, which is always great, and a few things he would love us to discuss. So these are topics that probably need their own episodes in their own right. So we've made notes of them. It's things like the prefabricated versus custom-made foot orthoses discussion, treadmill versus overground gait discussion, and things like that. They're absolute topics that we love talking about. I think what we're going to do is kind of assemble some data, get some publications, and on a week where it's fairly quiet news-wise, we'll probably do a special episode dedicated to each of those. So thank you, Jorn, for your ideas and your message as well. And lastly, good friend of the show, JW, James Welsh. Bless him. He's always the first to send me a text on a Wednesday morning when he's listened to us on his commute. Him and Toby were on episode 50 of Podchat Live. They were our guest hosts. And he sent me a photo. He's in Costa Rica at the moment, or at least he was when last week for his brother's wedding. And he sent me a photo of him relaxing in like a whirlpool or a spa or something in Costa Rica, holding up his phone with the Podchat Live podcast visible to see and saying, there's no nicer place to listen to you guys. And I think it's great. I've put it on our Twitter feed, on our Podchat Live Twitter feed, or X feed, I should say. So I want you to head over there. I want you to have a look at it. And what I want you to, I want, I mean, want to invite people to do is to try and beat it. I quite like the idea of photos being sent in of people listening to our podcast in beautiful places, scenic places. I don't know if you've seen this Instagram account, Craig. It's one of my favorites on Instagram, and it's called Scenic Pisses. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't, but I'm just looking for it now.
It's got over 1 million followers. I've been following it for a while. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's people who send in videos of themselves. You don't see anything naughty. You just see a stream of urine with a backdrop of something incredibly beautiful, like volcanoes and glaciers and things like that. And I quite like the idea of a scenic pisses sort of a vibe to show us where you're listening to Podchat Live. So head over to Twitter, take a look at JW's effort in Costa Rica, and please do direct message us or email us with a photo of yourself if you think you can beat it, and that would be great.
Okay, I've found them.
Enjoy.
I've
All
found
I can say is enjoy.
them. But isn't this is the sad thing about social media, is that people like that are probably going to make more money than you and I are ever going to make.
They really are. They really are.
Oh,
Oh, I don't
hey,
know. I
this also takes me back to, with the previous format of Podchat Live, we used to do the videos. I'd love to put up that photo of James and poke fun at him, but we in the audio we can't do that anymore.
No, we can't. We're gonna have to rely on. I've put it on our Instagram stories, and I've put it on our Twitter, our X feed as well. So that's where we'll be putting photos that anyone sends us of themselves, with proof that they're listening to the podcast. So that's great. Okay, so in the news, well. Two things. Firstly, we know Craig often likes to talk to us about shoes at the top of an episode. And we also like to take a look at things that have been in the news, in the mainstream media. And we have that wonderful scenario this week where some shoe news and some mainstream media news have dovetailed. Take it away, Craig.
It was quite extraordinary. Donald Trump has released a sneaker. Interestingly, he was in court. He got fined, was it $500 million? The next day he launches his sneakers for $399. He turned up at a sneaker conference in Philadelphia, which is quite extraordinary. But just looking at his sneaker, they look like the traditional Converse shoe with a gold top and American flag. Only 1,000 were made, and they literally sold out immediately. So I'd be curious to know who brought them, whether they were purchased by the sneakerheads or the MAGA crowd. I'm sure he's probably regretting not making getting more made on the initial offering. There may be more coming. So it was kind of interesting. At the launch, he was there was obviously two groups of people at the launch. One group booed him loudly and the other group cheered him loudly, which was, typical of where politics is around the world.
Do you think they knew at the sneaker conference, the trainer conference, do you think they knew he was coming? Do you think it was impromptu? How contrived do you think it was?
Oh no, there was some pre-publicity because there were quite a few MAGA people there. They knew he was going to be there, but it wasn't obviously widely publicised. It was publicised enough to get enough of his fan base there. So,
but they knew he was turning up, or they knew he was turning up to drop a shoe, because that caught me by surprise when I saw that.
Actually, I'm not sure of that. There were people who knew he was going to be there that did turn up to see him from his family. So the word got out. So whether it was just a selected group, I don't know. But
I agree with you though. Looking at the picture, it just looks like a gold Converse with a star spangled band around the ankle. Gold. Yeah. It reminded me of like Goldmember, the film with Mike Myers. Yeah. It's a strange business move for a man who. Well, maybe I'm just not sure what the motivation was for just 1,000 of them, because it clearly wasn't money, because there's such a ceiling when you only release 1,000. There's such a ceiling to it. So what's the game here?
Look, I don't know. Look, he does have his website where he sells. If you go to it, where the sneakers are being sold, there's a perfume he sells called Victory 47, which is, if he wins the next election, he'll be the 47th president. So you can buy a $99 bottle of perfume. So he does. This e-commerce merchandise. So again, I assume it's all just part of the fundraising that goes on with the presidential campaign.
Well, I've just sort of put the shout out for a challenge or a competition for beautiful places that you're, listening to the podcast. If you can send us a photo of you listening to the podcast in a beautiful place with a pair of Donald Trump gold sneakers on. That's it. You've won the game.
That would be the ultimate.
Okay, right. Enough of that, and let's talk some research. Let's talk about two papers that caught our eye this week. The first one is on a topic that is or has been shown to be one of the most popular topics when we did Podchat Live, the original versions, and that is vascular podiatry. Martin Fox came on, did two episodes, a lovely chap. When I saw him in Australia last year, and we were chatting, because he was episode 99 and we were on a hiatus at that point, and he was sort of happy that he was the last ever episode of Podchat Live, which he isn't anymore. So we'll bring some more vascular chat into the episodes as we find it. And this one is from a team of researchers in Turkey, and it was published last week, actually a little bit longer ago. 10th of February was its publication date, but we didn't catch it until last week. And it's in the Journal of Vascular Surgery, Venous and Lymphatic Disorders. And it is entitled Impact of Static Foot Disorders on the conservative treatment success in chronic venous disease patients without wounds. So a bit of a mouthful, but here's what they did. It was retrospective. They took 328 patients who had chronic venous disease. The vast majority of those were female. 268 of the 328 were female. But they took a load of these patients with CVD, chronic venous disease, and they took some radiological measurements of their calcaneal pitch angle. So this is a lateral view, and you know, if you will link to the paper, it's open access. You'll see the image, and this was what they used as a determinant of static foot disorders. Now, I hadn't necessarily come across the term static foot disorders, but essentially what they were doing were grouping people into sort of foot types, so high arched, normal arched, or you know, and then when in the low arched group, they would subcategorize them again into very low, you know, moderately low, etc. So it was essentially a foot typing sort of determinant. They looked at things like their visual analog scale scores, so pain scores, and something called the Revised Venous Clinical Severity Score, which I am not familiar with whatsoever. But they looked at these things both before and after conservative treatment for chronic venous disease over a 6 month period. Now, conservative treatment included physical exercise, calf muscle strengthening, ankle mobility, compression stockings, and some pharmacological treatment as well. Now, interestingly, what they found is the presence of static foot disorders, as in their terms, was associated with a decreased treatment success. So, in summary, patients with a normal foot arch, as determined by this determinant, consistently achieved the best treatment outcomes compared to other static foot disorders. The pes cavus group exhibited the lowest change in pain scores and in this revised venous clinical severity score as well. So we've kind of got a blend of vascular here with musculoskeletal as well. But really, really interesting. So these are patients without wounds who are having conservative care for chronic venous disease, and their foot shape, their arch type, their morphology seemed to dictate or predict how effective conservative care was. Pretty fascinating paper, Craig.
Oh, definitely, and I was quite pleased to see this one. It was retrospective, so it's not quite as strong as the prospective one, but still much stronger than the cross-sectional ones we've had till now. And I just did a quick search, and I've been able to find four papers in the last 10 or so years that have cross-sectional linked flat feet, pes planus, foot deformities to venous disease. Now, a cross-sectional study, you can only it, the venous disease could have caused the flat foot based on a cross-sectional study. So there's been that speculation for a while now that there is a correlation between venous disease and foot disorders. What this study has taken that a one by the retrospective design has taken it one step further and shown, well, those foot deformities do affect outcomes. They do play a role in not necessarily the risk. This wasn't a risk factor study, but they certainly play a role in how well people respond to some of the standard treatments for chronic venous disease. So that's really good. That's what we need. We've had the cross-sectional studies that have speculated the link. Now this is the first of, say, the retrospective, and hopefully there's some prospective studies in the future that confirm it. What I do find also find really interesting is what's the mechanism? They did speculate a little. I was a little disappointed in their discussion. They did speculate a little as to the mechanism. It would have been good if they could speculate a bit more and perhaps go into some of the mechanisms. They did point out, I'll just read from it. Anatomical studies show that the lateral plantar veins act as a reservoir in the foot. So when pressure is applied to the sole, these lateral veins empty, facilitating venous return. So it's possible that the presence of foot disorders affect that venous return. So yeah, that's just one possible speculated mechanism of the role. So again, most interesting. I do know, again, there have been a couple of studies separate to these that have looked at the use of foot orthoses in chronic venous disease. And while they didn't look at the effect on venous disease, there was a reduction in symptoms. But did it reduce the venous symptoms, or did it reduce musculoskeletal symptoms that were masked by the venous symptoms? So again, there's lots of speculation on this, but there's a whole wide open field for someone to pursue here.
Let me just clarify something you said that, or they said, and just check I heard correctly, because I'm just trying to reconcile it with my thoughts. You said the more lateral plantar foot pressure, the
Oh,
greater
no.
the.
Oh, no. What they're saying is the lateral anatomical studies have shown that the lateral veins are a reservoir for venous blood. So when you're walking, pressure, muscle contraction, this is the venous foot pump, puts the blood via the muscles back up through the venous return to the calf muscles that then return it further up. So the speculation is that if there is an anatomical or a biomechanical dysfunction, that venous return is interfered with.
So is the thought process here that the different foot shapes, because in my mind, pes cavus in this study being the one that exhibited the poorest outcomes. Now, when I think of a pes cavus foot, I often think of a foot that perhaps has prolonged lateral border weight bearing, is much, laterally deviated subtalar axis. So that to me suggests greater plantar pressures laterally. And if that's where the reservoir is, why would that not cause greater emptying of the reservoir,
Again,
greater venous return?
I'll pass on that. We can only speculate. Maybe the venous filling or the reservoir of venous blood there is interfered with, so there's not as much blood there to return. I don't. Again, all speculation.
Interesting though. I wonder if it could be conflated with sort of plantar pressure studies and things as well.
Oh, I know. I know. I've tongue in cheek said in some of my boot camp courses that you take we've got this plantar venous pump that is just like the calf muscle pump. What do foot orthotics do to that? Do foot orthotics improve it by putting additional pressure on the intrinsic muscles in the arch, or do they interfere with it? And again, we don't know, given that foot orthoses have been shown to help some of the symptoms in those with venous disease. Well, again, we can speculate. So,
Okay,
don't know.
well, interesting nonetheless. Let's talk about one more paper, and this one is another one that caught our eye. It was published 16th of February, so just a few days back, and it was published in the journal Cerebral Cortex, which I'm sure is a journal that all of us subscribe to and read regularly as well, and it's out of China. And this one caught our eye for obvious reasons when I read you the title, and that is: toe stimulation improves tactile perception of the genitals. So, 34 healthy male volunteers are sort of enrolled and randomly allocated into one of two groups: the group that gets tactile stimulation at foot level, or the group that gets a sham stimulation, so no stimulation at foot level. Now, when I was looking through the methodology, it's interesting because they recruited 34, but actually only 30 ended up going through, because you often look at research and you look at the inclusion criteria and the exclusion criteria. And I have to say, this is the first time I've seen this exclusion criteria. So 34 enrolled, only 30 was selected, because four were excluded because of a history of being having circumcision surgery. So you don't often see that as an exclusion criteria in foot research, obviously. So they then, what's the best way to describe this? Students, undergrads, or new grads, even podiatrists who regularly do foot level neurological testing will be familiar of the 2-point discrimination test. So that kind of test of tactile acuity. So how close together can we get 2 points, but they still feel like two discernible points rather than feel like 1 point. So what they did here was they in the group that had tactile stimulation, they sort of sweeped a kind of a brush over the big toe. And in the group that were in the sham group, they essentially had the same kind of mechanism performed. It was a machine that did it, but there was no kind of touching of the big toe. And then, amongst other things, they looked at 2-point discrimination of the genitals and the scrotum. Now, I'm made of questions with this one as to why. Maybe Craig's got some thoughts. But let's get straight to the chase. The results reveal that tactile stimulation of the big toe led to a reduction in the 2-point discrimination threshold, not only in the big toe that had been stimulated itself, but in the unstimulated genitals and scrotum as well. And it's worth noting they also re-perform this not just with the big toe, but with the metacarp, dorsum of the hand, and with the abdomen. And those, you know, tactile stimulation of those areas did not elicit a 2-point discrimination change in the genitals. So only a little brush of the toe changed the 2-point discrimination on these gentlemen's ball bags. So, Craig, why? Why?
I'm trying to decide if I want to say pass. Yeah, no, look, no. Just putting the erotic implications aside, the methods, the analysis, and everything seems fine to me. I can't see any issues.
It's good. It's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah, it was well done, well put together, well analysed. I think probably the reading through the paper, I think the most interesting part for me was the discussion about plausible mechanisms and what explanation there is. Setting aside the perhaps pseudoscience of the meridians, which have again been shown not to exist, there are a number of potential mechanisms. One they speculate on is that intracortical interaction between the two adjacent areas. So obviously an interaction between the two areas in the brain. The other plausible explanation is that the S1, where the nerves come into the spinal cord, they're pretty close to each other, the toe and the genitals. So, you know, there's possible an interaction there, which would explain why when they stimulated the hand, it didn't happen, because the nerves from the hand come in further up the spinal cord. So again, I just found that very interesting. It was good neuro anatomy, neurophysiological revision to get stimulated with that. So that was the most interesting part for me. But again, well analyzed. Yeah.
You know, we like to pick studies that we think are interesting or amusing, or perhaps have clinical utility or applicability. I don't know that this has the latter. I do like the idea of someone perhaps listening to this podcast on the morning or commute into work, and then having a morning's worth of neurovascular assessments to do, and just what might be going through their mind as they sort of are doing kind of a Hallux light touch testing and the effects you may be having at someone's genitals. But yeah, I don't know what we do with this, but as always, we will link to it. I think this one's open access from memory, so we encourage people to read it. There's a couple of really interesting pictures in the article. And as always, like you say, treat it as a bit of neurological revision, which is never a bad thing, is it? Good. Okay, we are on time for that to wrap up our episode. So as always, on behalf of Craig and myself, I'll say thanks again for listening. Thanks for all your support. We really appreciate the comments we get. Please do keep them coming. Social media, email us, get involved at podchatlive.com. And remember, JW has dropped the gauntlet with regard and set the bar with regards to photos of where you are listening to Podchat Live. So we would love to see more of those if you've got any travels coming up. So Craig, I look forward to speaking to you again next week and seeing what the next 7 days of news and research has in store for us.
No worries, great, thanks, and I'll see you next week.